The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
And greetings on a Tuesday, February 11th. This is Jeff Munn. I had to hesitate for a minute. Who am I? Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat at Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. I'd like to start today's program with a song. I'd like to sing Animal Crackers in My Soup in honor of the late Shirley Temple. If you're not aware, and we're actually going to get to some real news here in a minute, I woke up this morning to find out that the iconic child star Shirley Temple died this morning at the age of 85. And if you're younger than me, and that encompasses most of the population of this community, what's the big deal? Well, I'll tell you very quickly. When I was a kid, Channel 10, which was a CBS affiliate at the time, on Sundays, they would show Shirley Temple Theater at 11 a.m., noon, something like that. And they would show a Shirley Temple movie. So even though I was born way after Shirley Temple's impact on entertainment, we had Shirley Temple on in the house every Sunday, just, you know, and she was doing what she did as a child star. So when I saw that news today, that was kind of impactful to me. It probably isn't impactful to you, and that's okay. Well, we do welcome you to the Tuesday. I do encourage you, if you're near a bar today, to have a Shirley Temple cocktail, and it will not affect your ability to drive. But we have a full show, as we like to say in the biz today. Among other things, we will visit with Brian Windhorst of ESPN.com. He is their NBA writer here for tonight's Heat-Suns game. Talks about LeBron's dunk exhibition after practice yesterday, which was captured on video by this very website. And gives some perspective not only in the NBA, but how the Suns have been doing. We'll also visit with our friend Steve Gilbert, MLB.com. MajorLeagueBaseball.com and the D-backs beat writer for many, many years about how the club is shaping up with this being the first full day of workouts. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And our Talk to the Lobe segment on Tuesday, we'll keep it in a baseball theme with the head coach of Grand Canyon Baseball, Andy Stankiewicz. We'll look to talk with him about their move to Division I, which actually in a lot of ways might be a little bit easier for the baseball program than it is a lot of their programs over there on the Grand Canyon campus, and we'll talk about that coming up in the next couple of minutes. A lot to get to in the world of sports, and I'm going to tell you right up front, we're not doing Olympic updates here for one simple reason. I haven't watched more than 5 seconds. The only reason I have tried to tune in the Olympics was to look at Bob Costas's eye, and now I don't even get to do that because word came down this morning that for the first time since 1988, Costas is not anchoring an Olympic primetime show tonight. The eye infection's just gotten to the point where it's so bad, he is taking a night off. I also was a bit disturbed by the fact that he drank vodka with Mary Carrillo, but that's another story for another day. Tell you what, let's get to the latest in the world of sports that doesn't involve Bob Costas. And it's brought to you by Honda Resort and Casino, just 3 miles south of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That's the sound of CBS executives thinking we hit the jackpot, we got Costas off television. It's ski season. When you head up to Sunrise Ski Resort, make sure you stay at Honda. And again, tonight, big story in Phoenix at U.S. Airways Center, Heat and Suns. This has been an odd road trip for the Heat in this respect. A lot of times when teams get sent from one end of the country to the other, when the Suns go an Eastern road trip, they try to squeeze in 4 games maybe in 5 days, 4 games in 6 days. The Heat have had a number of off days on this West Coast road trip. And there's been a lot of sitting around. Granted, it's to the west. Most of the places they've gone, the weather has been very nice. But does the gap for LeBron James hurt, and his teammates, does it hurt the Miami Heat?
You got to play the game. It don't matter how many days in between. You got to play the game at the end of the day. And, you know, we didn't have 2 days off. Might have 2 days off from not playing a game, but we didn't have 2 days off.
They will tangle with the Suns tonight. We'll visit with Brian Windhorst coming up a little bit later on, get his thoughts on this matchup tonight. The Heat are trailing Indiana in the Eastern Conference standings, and I really don't think it's that huge an issue for them. But, of course, if they were to meet the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Pacers would have home court advantage, which could be a bit of a factor. This is the first full day or full squad workout day for the Diamondbacks, although most of the squad, if not the whole group, has been out at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick for at least a week. But since it is the official start of camp, it's a good time with pitchers and catchers officially already having been there to ask Kevin Towers, and he was asked yesterday, how camp has progressed to this point.
It's good to see the guys out there, and you know, you've been kind of trying to get a feel for what your club's going to look like once they take the field, and you start seeing them in uniform, and guys, it looks like everybody's taking care of themselves over the wintertime, really, other than Huddy and probably Matt Reynolds. We're a pretty healthy bunch, knock on wood, coming in. I mean, Cody's well ahead of schedule, so everybody looks to be in good shape. Everybody's excited.
And we'll visit with Steve Gilbert coming up in a few minutes, get his thoughts on how camp is starting out and where the position battles are and who has the edge, perhaps, in those position battles. And there are a few, which is a great thing. If you're a D-backs fan, you're thrilled with the depth they have in the starting rotation now with the addition of Bronson Arroyo. By the way, the move has not been made official yet, only because Arroyo is going through physicals. I believe he's doing that today. There is some contract language that needs to be cleared up. It's formality stuff at this point, so you can feel pretty confident that nothing will get in the way, and Bronson Arroyo will indeed be a Diamondback officially here very, very shortly. The other news about coming out of the world of sports is obviously about Michael Sam, the linebacker out of the University of Missouri. And I'm sure you know the story by now. Sunday night, the story broke that Michael Sam has announced that he's gay. And he will become the first openly gay athlete to enter a professional sport. Jason Collins is at age 35, just couldn't find an NBA team to sign him over the summer, and after he announced that he is gay. But Michael Sam announced it on Sunday night, and there's been an awful lot of reaction from an awful lot of people since the news came out. Well, Brad yesterday had Albert Breer, the NFL Network, on the program, and the question was raised about how does this impact Michael Sam as it relates to the NFL draft. And obviously the impact is really with the teams. How do they look at Sam now and say, are we ready to take this on? And Albert Breer was asked, what's the biggest fear NFL teams have right now about him?
You know, just talking to football people over the last, you know, whatever, 18 hours since the news broke.
Sure.
I think the one thing they're most worried about is that, you know, are they going to be allowed to look at this as just a strictly football decision? Because there's going to be so much pressure from the outside world on them, you know, to look at this kid as just another prospect, to the point where, you know, no one's going to be looking at him that way.
I agree in the sense that look, this is the year 2014, and we ought to be to a point where people aren't freaking out. Basically, is it going to be a weird period of time for whoever drafts him? Yeah. Is there going to be intense media coverage? Yes. I understand that, and believe me, Michael Sam understands that too. But I would like to think that the majority of NFL teams will judge Michael Sam on his ability as a football player. This is something I'm always a little uncomfortable when people make the analogy with Jackie Robinson, only because it was a totally different... The impact of what Jackie Robinson did for society. I understand the need there on the part of some people to try to make the connection. And I suppose there are some similarities, but I don't think it's a direct link between Jackie Robinson and what Michael Sam is trying to do. But I will tell you this, that I do see there's going to have to be somebody really courageous to step forward and be willing to draft Michael Sam and do it basically for football reasons. You would really like to think in the year 2014 that we're well past the point where a player like Michael Sam will be subjected to the abuse verbally and otherwise that Jackie Robinson went through. And I just rewatched the movie 42 the other night on, I think it was HBO. But then you think about the guy at Texas Tech who allegedly called Marcus Smart a piece of crap. My guess is the language was a little stronger, and you wonder to yourself, maybe we haven't progressed that far. By the way, you can like us, facebook.com/sports360az. Follow us on Twitter at sports360az. Very quickly, Facebook question today. What has been your favorite NBA dunk? And there'll be a list of possibilities, right, Eric?
Yeah, Simpson? We threw a couple up there. The Cedric Ceballos blindfold dunk, the Vince Carter Olympic dunk, obviously the Michael Jordan free throw line dunk, Sports360, Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Okay, very good. We come back. Brian Windhorst will talk about tonight's Heat-Suns game. I'm hearing that music, and I think, is my insurance up to date? What do I think about that right now? Yeah, it's another story for another day. Back after this on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, and hello, AZCentral.com. Nice to have you along, too.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat on Tuesday, February the 11th. Please don't remind me that Valentine's Day is Friday. I don't care. What I do care about, basketball, because tonight at U.S. Airways Center, the Suns take on the Miami Heat. And Brian Windhorst, who is a very, very talented writer with ESPN.com, covers the Heat, was in Cleveland when LeBron was there. And then, and obviously covers a great many topics concerning the National Basketball Association, joins us now for a few minutes. Brian, it's Jeff Munn. How are you today?
Hi, Jeff. Good.
I would say, are you enjoying the weather? But you're based in Miami, so it's a silly question.
You know, I'm from Akron, Ohio. So, you know, I don't, you can't base a city just based on its weather, because otherwise I would be throwing stones from a glass house. So, but it is wonderful, and it's unfortunate that I don't have my golf club, because this is like the perfect weather to golf in. And I know that I think so. I don't know for sure, but he moved up practice yesterday, and they've got some golfers on their team, and they've got some golf clubs on this trip. So my guess is Ray Allen based that on link somewhere yesterday afternoon.
You bring up the fact that they got the golf clubs and such. They've had a long break in the middle of this road trip, which for the NBA is a little unusual when they send teams out of the conference, whether it's Western teams going east or vice versa. They try to compact games, 4 games, 5 days, 3 games in 5 days and such. It's a bit of a quirk for the Heat to have this much downtime, but does it come at a good time for them?
Well, so it was even crazier last week. The last week they played in L.A. against the Clippers on Wednesday night, and then they had Thursday and Friday off. And their next game was Saturday in Salt Lake. So they stayed in L.A. 2 extra days. They didn't go to Salt Lake City until Friday night. And then they went out and laid a complete egg against the Jazz and lost. The Jazz had played Friday night in Dallas and came in there and outplayed the Heat. So maybe this time off isn't necessarily a good thing. Although this road trip, it extends past the All-Star break. There are players who are going to the All-Star break, like LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. Those guys are going to be gone from Miami for about 3 weeks on this whole thing. So this is an unusual road trip, but their schedule has frankly been very easy. It was the easiest in the NBA until about 2 weeks ago, when it finally started toughen up. And I'm actually anxious to see how they play tonight, because, you know, they are 3 games back of the Pacers, and they really can't afford to lose many more games on this road trip, because they've given one away in Salt Lake, and they're playing a Suns team that is, you know, feeling pretty good about itself right now. So and the Heat are coming off a loss. So I'm expecting, with both teams having 2 days off, this to be a relatively intense game.
Brian Windhorst of ESPN.com, following the Miami Heat, who are in town tonight to play the Suns, joins us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad at Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. I want to get to some general NBA questions, but you mentioned Indiana. The Suns have beaten them twice. Do teams in the East use that as a template? Do they take the tape of that game and say, okay, now we have a blueprint?
I don't know. I mean, a team like the Heat, I don't think they care about anything than what's going on with themselves. I think they've benefited, frankly, from the fact that when they have, you know, a bad week or two, that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago they would have been, you know, crucified for. Generally now people just shrug. Sorry, I dropped my phone there.
That's all right.
People just shrug their shoulders. You know, everybody can remember a couple of years ago when they got together, that when they would have a loss or two, that people would go crazy. And now I think they like the fact that that they can get away with a loss or two. But, you know, the Suns, for some reason, even though we're 50 games into the season, it still seems like they sneak up on people. It still seems like when they play you and they play this up-tempo style and you know, it seems like they forget that Goran Dragic is left-handed. It seems like they forget that they'll beat you down the court. It seems like they forget that the Morris brothers can shoot. It's funny. I mean, I'm sure that Suns fans feel like you know, they don't get the proper respect, especially since they're not being represented in the All-Star game. But I think in a weird way that it does have some benefits, because I think that, you know, it enables them to sort of sneak up on teams, even though they've been successful all year.
You bring up the style of play of the Suns, and it's not quirky or bizarre, but it is a more of an up-tempo than a lot of teams in the NBA play. And I've always thought to myself, even going back to not just the Mike D'Antoni era, but going all the way back to Cotton Fitzsimmons in the late 80s and early 90s, in a one-game scenario where you're on a road trip and you play a Utah team that isn't quite as up-tempo, when you play the Suns, even if you have a couple days to get ready, it's got to be a rough adjustment on a lot of teams, because they do play a much more up-tempo style than most teams in the league play.
I also think it has to do with, frankly, a respect factor for the individual players. You know, the Suns don't have guys who, for the most part, command a lot of respect. Like, for example, P.J. Tucker is one of the better defenders in the NBA, I think, at least when it comes to versatility. He's a very good defender, I think we could all could agree on. But I don't think, like, LeBron James, a week out, is saying, "Boy, we got the Suns next week, and I gotta get ready to go up against PJ Tucker." But yet, I'll put PJ up there as a wing defender instead of anybody. So I think, and, you know, that's the other thing. Like, I don't think, you know, when they looked at this road trip, they were like, "Okay, in LA, you know, we got to deal with Blake Griffin, you know, and then we got Stephen Curry coming up tomorrow." I don't think anybody's like, "Well, we got to get ready for Dragic. You know, we got to prepare ourselves for the Dragic attack." Even though those guys, you know, frankly, you look at Dragic, I mean, he's been as key to his team's victories as any of those other guys. So, you know, some of it is a disrespect factor. And, you know, the Heat are a team that has struggled at times, the Utah game being an example. They've struggled at times with facing the best from the other team every single night. You know, they get fatigued and get tired when they come out to play a game they want to sort of go half speed and win. And the other team tries to play their best game of the month. And that's cost them some wins, especially during this season. And I think the Suns, you know, maybe benefit from the other way. The Suns don't get the respect. And I see it all the time when I watch them. I watch guys, the angles they take on Dragic and the way they try to defend him, and they act like this guy hasn't been tearing up the league. You know, it's just like, you guys not know. I'm sure they're briefed in their scouting reports. I'm sure their coaches are doing their job, but you know, in the NBA, there's a delayed sense of respect, and then once you earn that respect, it usually lasts too long. You know, like people probably think that Ray Allen is like, you know, one of the shooters you take the shot no matter what. Well, Ray Allen's having the worst shooting season of his career this year. So, you know, people are a little bit late to see trends, and the Suns are definitely a trend.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN.com, joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. I want to step back now and look at a couple other items around the league. You're from Ohio, so obviously you have a connection with the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's a local tie here to this, because David Griffin, who has taken over as the interim general manager, worked for a long time in the Suns front office, has a lot of friends here. How much of the change, the dismissal of Chris Grant, had to do with the Anthony Bennett draft pick and whatever impact it's had in the Cavaliers locker room?
Yeah, I mean, Griffith told me about his meager Phoenix roots from
from the west side.
Now he tells me a story when he was a kid. You know, he came from the barrio. Talks about dealing with the Mexican gangs.
He did.
He's got some stories. You know, the Cavs situation, you know, they were obviously having a failing year. They had their the table set for them this year. You know, in the Eastern Conference, you could win 44 games and maybe get the fourth seed. You know, you didn't have to have a 58-win season to get home court in the first round. And the Cavs have 40-win talent, and they're generally woefully underachieving. And it's odd that the first guy to go when he had an underachieving team like that would be your general manager. It's very rare to see a general manager change mid-season. The last time I can remember it, I could be wrong, but the last time I can remember it is Brian Colangelo, and that wasn't a firing. That was like a trade.
Yeah.
So, and I think the reason is because of what happened with Anthony Bennett. I mean, that draft pick has been such a letdown that it cost the general manager his job. And now, normally you say, you know, you got to give a rookie at least 1 year, and in some cases two. And you look around at the rest of this this draft class. I mean, one of the other guys that the Cavs were seriously considering was Alex Len. I mean, that was a guy they almost took at number one. And I think the Phoenix fans would say, you know, maybe they should have taken, you know, they were better off taking Bennett. And, you know, their other choices were Nerlens Noel, who hasn't played. And was, even though his knee is healthy, his game is so broken that the 76ers decided they weren't even going to play him this year. They're just going to rebuild his game. And, you know, the guys who are, considered the leaders for Rookie of the Year, Michael Carter-Williams and Victor Oladipo, they're really having just pedestrian seasons. And I don't think, you know, maybe Carter-Williams, I don't think you look at Oladipo as a future star. At least I don't. I mean, I think he's a future role player. And so it was really as bad of a draft as everybody said. And but because Bennett's been so bad, it's just put so much pressure. And frankly, the Cavs felt like they were going to have a chance at LeBron this year. And that ownership believed that if they could get into the playoffs and get maybe the fifth or sixth seed and things went south in Miami, that they would have a chance at LeBron. And so in a way, you know, Dan Gilbert, the owner, made a firing because he realizes he may have lost his chance at LeBron. And so, you know, David Griffin's got a really hard job, and I expect him to make changes before the trade deadline. But, you know, that circumstances there are very, very unusual, to say the least.
I got about a minute and a half left, Brian. Out west, you're starting to hear more chatter, more praise thrown at Portland. I've been a big LaMarcus Aldridge fan for a long time, and Damon Lillard has been on the radar screen with a lot of people inside the NBA since last year when he broke in. To me, in a conference that has a lot of heavyweight teams, Portland is the mystery team to me, and I think they're the ones that could cause the most havoc once the playoffs start. Do you see it that way?
Love Portland. Love watching them play. LaMarcus Aldridge is really coming into his own. He's a top 10 player in the league now. Damian Lillard, one of the most exciting young players we've seen in the league in a while. He's going to do every event on All-Star Weekend. People are going to come to a new appreciation of him who may not know about him in the league. But I don't buy them as a serious contender this year because their defense is in the bottom 10 and has been all year. And they're a team that relies heavily on jump shots. And history tells us that that formula, bad defense, jump shot heavy, is not successful in the playoffs. So I always like to watch them play. ESPN has been picking their games up, just like they just picked up a game with the Suns, because they're exciting to watch. But I do not see them this year as being a contender. They've got to get that defense improved. I could see them as a second-round team. But, you know, in the offseason, you're going to probably be hearing about how the Blazers are making moves to get their defense better.
Brian, I appreciate the time. I know it's always busy when you're covering the Miami Heat and all the players that garner so much attention. So I appreciate you coming on with us for a few minutes. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll keep reading you on ESPN.com. Thanks for the visit.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you, Brian. Brian Windhorst, ESPN.com NBA writer. Suns and Heat tonight at U.S. Airways Center. And again, I'm not sure if that game is a sellout as of yet, but we ought to be awfully close if it's not there already, because what a tremendous matchup. We'll turn our attention to baseball, and we will talk with Steve Gilbert of MLB.com and get his thoughts on the first full squad workouts today. While the team has basically been there for the last week or so, and even some players beyond that. But we'll get the latest on baseball from Steve Gilbert coming up next. Brad Sismat Show, Jeff Munn for Brad, Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. We know you're there.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Obviously, this is the first day of the full squad reporting to Salt River Field with Talking Stick, although a lot of players are already out there for workouts, and so thought it'd be a good chance to catch up with our pal Steve Gilbert from MLB.com, the D-backs beat reporter who's been around this team since day one back in 1998, and he joins us here today on the Brad Sismat Show. Steve, it revolves a lot around the signing of Bronson Arroyo, but already we're starting to see the storylines develop for this camp, and they involve position battles specifically, and they're both itch situations, and I'm thinking particularly of the shortstop and of the back of the rotation and the bullpen as well, where this team is dealing from a position of depth. I would anticipate that you probably, as you look at it, you see quite the same thing.
Yeah, I think so, Jeff. I think the one thing that they still had left on their to-do list when camp opened last week was adding some depth in the rotation. And the signing of Bronson Arroyo, you know, I've seen various things about did they overpay for him, did they this, did they that, but really they felt like they were one starter short when it came to that, and they're all in this year. It was a $98 million payroll heading in, so it's $108 million payroll now, and they felt like that was the thing that they needed to do because that was something that could help put them over the top this year.
Let's go category by category here, and we'll start first with the rotation. Already, and much has been made about the fact that Randall Delgado is out of options. He would probably be ticketed for the bullpen if he doesn't get the number five starter role. There's obviously Archie Bradley. I think this whole thing now with Arroyo in the fold, Steve, involves much more than Archie Bradley and Randall Delgado. I posed the question to a couple people last couple of days, is it possible that if everybody stays healthy, that Kevin Towers gets to the end of March and decides maybe he can make a trade because he's got too many starters and he can shore up another area by dealing a starting pitcher?
Well, you know, Jeff, I think that's right. I think one of the dangers is we always tend to look early in spring or just before spring and try to pick the opening day roster and say who's a lock and who's not a lock. And what we always forget is that there's six, and in this case 7 or 8 weeks till opening day, and a lot can happen between now and then. We don't know what's going to happen with this rotation. Will they stay healthy? Is it a situation where Kevin Towers will say, hey, you know, now I'm 6-7 starters deep and I can deal a starter for some more help in a different area or prospects to kind of even make the farm system more deep? So I think while on paper it may look like, hey, Archie Bradley is the odd man out, they have 5 starters already, a lot can change between now and then. And you make a good point that now they have depth, and when you have depth, especially at the positions where they have depth and pitching and shortstop, two spots that people always seem to be looking for, that can be quite valuable, especially towards the end of spring training.
Steve Gilbert of MLB.com joins us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com. I want to get back to the subject of the farm system in a minute, but let's talk also about the bullpen, because if Delgado, and this has a domino effect, if he goes to the bullpen, obviously he's a guy that can pitch multiple innings, but it's a crowded bullpen all of a sudden. And I started thinking about, if you go by Kevin Towers' theory, if you build the bullpen from the ninth inning going backwards 8-7-6, there's obviously, you've got Addison Reed and J.J. Putz. Then you start thinking about the eighth inning. David Hernandez probably deserves to fit in there somewhere. You got Ziegler. You have Cole Menner. You have Joe Thatcher. I mean, there's a lot of good problems for Kevin Towers and his staff to try to sort out, and again, assuming that everybody stays healthy moving forward.
And I think what it does, Jeff, is when you talk about the depth, what it provides is competition, and I think we've seen in the past, in 2011, it jumps out to me during spring training, there was a lot of competition during spring training. You know, Gibby was famous for saying everybody's in the mix and everybody has a shot to win a starting job and everybody has a chance to make the team. But when you're deep like they are, and you just said some of the guys in the bullpen, and, you know, let's not forget Will Harris did a nice job for them last year, and he could end up being the odd man out if everything stays the way it is right now. So and if you send him to AAA, now you've got somebody down in AAA that arguably deserves to be in the big leagues, and now there's some real competition if guys aren't performing during the season. It gives you options. It keeps guys on their toes. I think you're right. The domino effect really helps out in terms of depth and competition, and it's nothing but a positive for this team.
Going to the shortstop competition, what I've read, and these are things that you have written on the D-backs website, dbacks.com, is that maybe Didi Gregorius goes in with a little bit of an edge just because of the experience. How much of an edge does that give him again in competing against Chris Owings?
Maybe a little bit of an edge. I think that the organization really was impressed from what they saw from Chris Owings last year in terms of, you know, numbers are numbers in AAA, but I think that they saw a little bit more plate discipline from him, which was the kind of thing that had always been the knock on him.
And I think when he came up in September, they were really impressed with the way he carried himself and what they saw from him. And I think they think he has probably a little bit more of an upside as far as offensively goes. Probably not as good defensively as Didi Gregorius. That's just simply because, not because Chris Owings is not a good fielder, but just because Didi Gregorius is so good at short. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out this spring, because one of those guys is probably ticketed for AAA with Cliff Pennington serving as the backup.
Steve Gilbert, MLB.com, DBacks.com, joining us for a few minutes here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. You talked about a minute ago about if a trade were to be made in the spring, that there might be a possibility of going after some prospects. The farm system as it sits right now, and obviously KT dealt a lot of players who are coming up through the system, not a lot, but a handful, over the winter. As I look at this farm system, Steve, and I think, okay, where are they in most need of a boost, an immediate kind of jolt? One area to me is behind the plate. Tuffy Goswitch, Herring Blanco will battle for the number two spot behind Montero on the major league roster. Striker Trahan is down in the system and is working his way up. But I also have read that he may not stay behind the plate through the majority of his playing career. Is that the area you think that has the greatest need for some immediate help in terms of getting prospects in, is behind the plate at catcher?
Yeah, I could see them. I could see them doing that. I could see them also trying to get a little bit more depth as far as pitching goes. That might be closer to being ready at the AAA level, especially if they move Delgado back to the bullpen. So I think that certainly catching at the upper levels is something that they might want to look at getting a little deeper in. But again, towards the end of spring training, when teams are, I don't want to use the word desperate, but when they're you know, off-season plans are kind of not looking the way they had hoped they would by the end of spring training, and they need a shortstop or they need another pitcher, the Diamondbacks will certainly be in a position of strength, because there's nobody that they feel like right now they have to deal.
Got about a minute left. Early on, and again, today's the first full squad workout, but the squad has been pretty much intact there at Salt River Fields for several days. Is there a different pace to the workouts because of the unusual schedule?
I think they're going to try to pace themselves. It's one of the biggest challenges for Kirk Gibson this spring is designing a schedule that keeps his guys sharp, but doesn't burn them out because of the extra time that they have with the trip to Australia. Really, spring training's too long as it is, as far as position players are concerned, but you need that time for your pitchers to get their arms in shape. So it's always a balancing act between getting the pitchers their innings in and not overtaxing your position players before the season starts.
Well, obviously, every day Steve has the latest information on the D-backs at workouts at dbacks.com. MLB.com does a terrific job with reports on all the teams, and most of the other teams are reporting pitchers and catchers late this week or over the weekend, so you can get the latest information there. Steve, appreciate the time. I promise you'll see me face-to-face here one of these days very, very soon. I appreciate you spending time with us on the phone here.
Jeff, always my pleasure.
Steve Gilbert of MLB.com, terrific writer, and again, they have daily updates on the progress of camp. Here's the thing about Bronson Arroyo, and the signing still, by the way, isn't official because he flew in on Monday to take physicals. There are some contract language things that have to be worked out. So technically, Arroyo is not under contract as of yet. It's a formality. They're just taking their time with some things, and then the club will announce it. But keep in mind that as soon as the Masahiro Tanaka signing with the Yankees hit the books, there were a lot of people that really, you know, and Kevin Towers had said, we'd really like to have a number one starter. And yeah, every team would like to be able to go out and find that in the marketplace. But as we sit right now, there were some people, even after the Tanaka signing, that said, go out and get David Price. David Price has signed a one-year deal with Tampa. He's going to start the year with the Rays. They might choose to deal him toward the deadline, knowing that he could very possibly walk. But that's the only guy that comes into the heading under the heading of number one starter. Arroyo, among other things, in 2011, this is just a testament to his durability, pitched through a bout of Valley Fever. And if you followed the Diamondbacks for any length of time, you know what the impact Valley Fever had on Connor Jackson. It effectively ended his career. He was never the same player after that. Bronson Arroyo, never been on the DL, pitched through Valley Fever in 2011. This guy is durable. He will make his start every fifth day. He will throw you six, seven innings most of the time. and he'll get to 200 innings by the end of the season. And that's pretty much where the market sits right now. That's pretty much all you can ask for. And no draft pick compensation. We thank Steve for being with us. We've got more of the Brad Sesmatch Show on the way, and we join you each and every day here, Monday through Friday, sports360az.com, azcentral.com. Surf around the website, sports360az.com. Lots of great content. And we'll have more of the Brad Sesmatch Show on the way.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at sports360az.
Well, it might be better if I turn my mic on. That would help. Sorry about that. Brad Sesmatch Show. On a, what day is this? Tuesday. I've completely lost track of what I was saying. We join you at sports360az.com, azcentral.com. This is our weekly Talk to the Lopes segment. And it's kind of fun to talk baseball. We were talking with Steve Gilbert of MLB.com about the D-backs. Now let's turn our attention to college baseball. It's an interesting situation for Grand Canyon in baseball, because with every sport, so much has been made about, oh, you're going to Division I, you're playing in the WAC, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, the baseball program has been there before in the late 90s, and so they have some amount of familiarity with it, but it's still quite an adjustment, as it has been for every other program. And the head coach of the Antelopes and a one-time Arizona Diamondback, Andy Stankiewicz, joins us for a few minutes here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Andy, it's Jeff Munn. How are you?
Jeff, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Every program at Grand Canyon obviously has had to make somewhat of an adjustment from the level of competition. I think what's really interesting for your program is how many games you have to play on the road this year. I know that's just a bizarre occurrence. It's not something you're going to face every year, but 33 of 52 games away from Brazel Stadium is one of the challenges you have to face this year.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. You know, when we got named to Division One, you know, baseball scheduling, it's done pretty early. And so I started making phone calls, and everybody was like, hey, you know, Andy, I'm already done with 2014. You know, let's talk 15. And the ones that were not done were like, okay, yeah, I have a game or two available, but you have to come to our place. And so it was just, you know, kind of one of those deals where you kind of have to just wear it for year one, and then you know, next year we'll have a much better, more balanced schedule, obviously. And obviously, love to create more home games than on the road, especially with the weather we have here. So I do know that as we move forward, you know, I'm already talking to some teams up north and back east about opening up here next year. And so those schools are looking for a warm weather climate to come start the season, so it'll be better.
Let me just to touch on that from one other aspect. Has it been easier to line up teams out of conference because you're Division One? Obviously, and I think this is true with most sports, when you're not Division One, it's just D1 teams just don't want to play it because there's just no value. But right now that you're D1, it opens up a whole lot more possibilities in terms of teams that you can contact and say, hey, can you put us on the schedule? It does open up a lot more possibilities, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, it does. It does, and I think once you know we kind of establish ourselves, hopefully as a nice ball club, you know, not just on the West, but you know, nationwide, you're gonna hopefully we'll get more teams want to play us. You know, the big thing now with postseason play is the RPI, you know, your strength of schedule, and so you know the key is to establish ourselves as a program that can compete and win some ball games. Then you're going to start to see, I think we'll start to see some teams, some of the big boys want to schedule us, you know, just because everyone's so concerned about this RPI number. And if you're on the bubble, you know, working towards the end of the season and looking at trying to make a postseason bid, and your RPI is not strong enough because you didn't play strong enough competition, you know, people are somewhat concerned with that. And the big boys, not so much, you know, teams in the Pac-12 and the SEC, because if you do well in the conference, you know, you're going to get an opportunity to go to the postseason. But I think it's the other mid-majors like ourselves that have to kind of try to massage the schedule a little bit so that we're in a good spot when postseason is available.
You return 18 players, which in this day and age for a college baseball program is a pretty healthy number from a team that went 40-19 last year. And is it safe to say, now you've got a couple of really good pitchers, but is Jorge Perez really at the point where you would say he's our number one guy?
Yeah, he is. And then Andrew Nader, the sophomore, local boy, left-handed pitcher, he has established himself as pretty doggone good as well. I think those two on any given night. Could go one could go Friday, one could go Saturday. But right now, I think because George is a junior, you know, he's ever since he was here his freshman year, he's pitched on a weekend for us. He's pitched in some big games, obviously in the World Series last year, and then he's two summers he's pitched up in a real competitive collegiate summer league up in Oregon. So I think naming him kind of our Friday night guy is I think what we should do.
What I remember of that ballpark, Andy, and Andy Stankiewicz, the head coach of Grand Canyon University Baseball, joins us. What I remember of that ballpark is it's a right-handed hitter-friendly ballpark in the sense that if I remember correctly, and I admit it's been a few years since I've been out there, it's a little shorter distance down the left field line than the right field line. Now, that being the case, if my memory serves me correct, I would think that that puts a lot of challenge on a left-hander like Naderer to be successful, knowing that he's going to face a lot of right-handed hitters.
You're right. You're right. Number one, you do need to come back out soon, hopefully this spring.
I will.
Thank you. And number two is you're exactly right. It is a little bit shorter. We have they built a big wall there. It's kind of similar to kind of like the Green Monster.
Yes.
In a way, where it's really elevated. So you got to get it pretty good to get it up over the wall. But it is a little bit closer, and it is. I would agree with that. It's a right-handed, dominant kind of a hitter ballpark. And Andrew, you know, he's got a great changeup now. He knows how to pitch in when he has to, and he's a two-seam fastball. He can work away to a righty to get him hopefully to hit a ground ball to short or third. So he's just tremendously confident. He really trusts his stuff, and he believes in himself. And he's not one of these guys that feels like he has to strike everybody out. You know, he's not afraid to let them make contact, and especially if he puts the ball where he wants to. But occasionally, and his breaking ball is as good as a breaking ball I've seen in a long time from a college pitcher. A lot of right-handers will swing and miss, and that tells you it's a pretty good left-handed breaking ball when righties will swing over the top of it.
The other thing about Naderer, and it will help us transition into talking about position players, is he earned a Gold Glove last year, a Rawlings Gold Glove Award. So did Michael Pomeroy. I've always been one of those guys that, especially for a first baseman, give me the strong fielding percentage, and I'm not going to completely discount the offense, and you don't have to with Pomeroy because he put up some really strong numbers offensively. But if you can come to me with a first baseman that has a fielding percentage of 1,000, I kind of look at it, oh, okay, he's my guy, and I'll worry about the hitting later.
Well, you're right. He can do both, and it sure is nice. I can't tell you times that our guys will throw a ball in the dirt, and you're like, you know, two outs around third base, you know, two outs around second base, and ball kind of get away from our infielder, and he'll throw it in the dirt, and you're like, you kind of hold your breath that moment. You're like, oh, gosh. And then Mike just makes a clean pick and just jogs off the field and dumps the ball on the mound, and it's like, okay, really, that's just what he does, you know. And so that is a nice feature from a defensive standpoint, where you have a first baseman that can really handle the glove. I mean, a lot of 3-1 putouts where he will go fill the ball kind of in the hole between him and second baseman and make a nice little pivot, make a nice feed to our pitcher cover. And that stuff's not easy to do. And he has just established himself as a great fill with his glove. And then, like you said, he's no slouch to play as well. I mean, he's been for 2 years we've been here, probably one of our most consistent hitters the past couple of years.
The other thing, and I think this is true in college baseball in general, the game has kind of transitioned into more of a contact hitting type of game. You still see power in some places, and some of it is due to the ballparks or the quality of the player involved. But I'm thinking of Brian Kraft, led the club last year with 5 home runs, but really college baseball has become so much more for position players about, you know, contact. You don't necessarily need to swing from the heels. We'd much rather see you put the ball in play. And when going back to what you were saying about Brazel Stadium with the big fence in left field, the immediate thing that says to me is you'd like to have a guy that isn't thinking so much about trying to drive the ball out of the ballpark, but just drive the ball into the gaps, and you have a very potent offensive club. You don't have what most people would say is a lot of power, but to me, that's what college baseball is now, is much more gap power, the ability to put the ball in play, isn't it?
It is. Well, I think the last, 2 years now, they came up with a BB Core bat that all the colleges have to use now. It's an aluminum bat, but it's called BB Core, and it's really taken a lot of distance off the flight of the ball. The ball comes off the bat similar to the other older bats, but the ball just doesn't carry as well. And so you don't see, those, like you said, the gorilla ball back when I was in college, when you had college hitters hitting 40, 35, 40 home runs in a 50-game season. You know, now it's just, for you to hit a home run, you really got to square it up and get it good. And so you don't see it. And yeah, Jeff, I'll tell you, I'd love to get a couple big boys in here that can hit a 3-run homer. But it's just you're right. It's just difficult sometimes to find those guys. And if they're that good, MLB will draft them and they won't make it to school anyways. And so you find yourself finding players that can put the ball in play. They can really run from an offensive standpoint. We've got some guys that can really get down the line, and it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to hit fly balls, when they're not going to leave the park. Or if they hit a ground ball, they can put a lot of pressure on the defense.
Andy Stankiewicz, the head coach of Grand Canyon University Baseball, joins us here on Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com, the Brad Sesmatt Show with Jeff Munn. There are so many good college baseball programs in the Western United States. Some may view the WAC as a mid-major, but I think in terms of college baseball, as you look at the league you're joining, I think that doesn't really apply here because there are so many strong programs that may not get the national attention that the BCS conferences get, but the WAC has some very good and strong programs top to bottom, don't they?
They do. You look at Cal State Bakersfield, and their coach, Bill Kernan, comes from from Cal State Fullerton, and he's got a great feel for college baseball and how to succeed there. New Mexico State, Rocky Ward, son of Gary Ward, who was at Oklahoma State, all those years. Oklahoma State was going to the College World Series in Omaha, and so it's very difficult, it's a lot of parity. There really is in the game. And, we're excited about jumping out there and getting into the WAC and competing, and obviously curious to see where we'll kind of line up and all that. But, nonetheless, it's going to be a pretty competitive environment, for us, and like it has for all of our teams here. Like you said earlier, when you came on, it's been a bit of a transition for everybody. And we'll run into those same hurdles, that everybody else has run into.
No question. The schedule starts February 21st against Hofstra. It's a home game. That's the home opener at Brazos Stadium. Be televised by Cox 7, and then off you go from there. Andy, I appreciate the time. The best of luck to your program. Say hi to your softball coach for me. I know her.
Oh, I will. See, they did well. They
Yeah, well.
Went 2-3 over the weekend. Hey, Ann is the fiery one, so I know she's probably not happy with it. But once she probably settles down, I think she's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think she'll be just fine. And you're right, she's fiery, and that's a good thing. Andy, appreciate the time. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Andy Stankiewicz, head baseball coach at Grand Canyon University. They open their home schedule on February 21st. Interesting. It's interesting for Grand Canyon because, as I said, unlike perhaps in basketball, where you've got some challenges in terms of scheduling non-conference because of the quality of programs in this part of the country, it's a much different deal for baseball and for softball as well, because there are so many good programs, and it's a little bit easier to put together a non-conference schedule. Busy day in sports. Boy, we got the Olympics going. I haven't even talked about the Olympics. And the reason I haven't talked about it is because I haven't watched it. That's what a great transition that is. But you know what? We'll come back and have more on the world of sports coming up after break. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com. This is Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatt. Happy Tuesday.